Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Brian Hyatt.
This is Rolling Stone Music Now. I have with me Brittany Spanos and Rob Sheffield, and we're here to talk about the biggest release of the week, which is, of course, the first single from Slash's Blues Project. Oh, wait, sorry. Nope, wait. I misspoke. That is not the most important single of the week. We are actually going to be talking about Ariana Grande's first album in a while, Eternal Sunshine, which Brittany has reviewed and given it the instant classic label. Brittany, tell us, of course we could read review, which I recommend everyone do, but tell us, first of all, what makes this an instant classic?
So the way that I heard the album was, Rob and I were at a listening session last week, and then I got a stream a couple days ago. You both understand when you go to a place and you listen to an album in a room with other journalists, it's not the best way to listen to music usually. It's not the best way to absorb music in the same way that it does when you have your headphones in and you're listening to it in your home or in the car or on the train. And the amount of songs that I had immediately stuck in my head from the first listen of this album was like deeply insane. I had multiple songs that I was just running through my head until I had the stream and could actually really dig into it and listen to it and have that album with me. But yeah, I think it's just a really brilliant Ariana album. I think it's everything that you really love and want from her. I think it's such a great combination specifically of Sweetener and Thank You Next. It feels like it pulls the best parts of both of those albums out and is just like a much more kind of mature and like just a really great kind of combination of those two really excellent albums from her. I think it's just like lyrically one of her best. I think vocally she sounds incredible. She like produces all of her own vocals. So it's really great to see how that's developed over the course of her career. And a lot of the songs are just also super fun. I've been really enjoying it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the Max Martin part really helps this album. It's more traditionally songful, you might say, than some of her more recent work, and more, she moves away from the sort of like white R&B thing that was her main thing for a really long time, which was great, but I also think maybe is a little dated for various reasons in 2024, especially when you have that pop position in R&B as being taken by actual R&B singers like SZA, who are doing, frankly, more forward-looking and arguably interesting things with R&B, so it'd be a little weird for that and many other reasons to stick with that direction. So I love how sonically diverse this album is.
Yeah, and like the songs that are that traditional Ariana R&B, like The Boy Is Mine. True Story. I find that they're really good at being like a little bit nostalgic, but not like too hardcore about it.
There's places where she dips back into that, but in a different way. And then there's places where she goes in entirely different directions. Rob, what's your overall reaction to what we're saying and to the album itself?
I love this album. It's very much focused. It's very much from a completely different place emotionally, musically, from Positions, which was her last album, which was a long time ago. And who takes 3 years between albums these days?
Four, right? 2020? Yeah. 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, for her to be coming in like this with a really unified, really conceptually unified, it's a very musically diverse album, but it's a sad album of breakup songs to a large extent. And it's very emotionally intense. So even though it's got a very different sort of focus from Positions, it's still very focused in the way that Positions was focused. It's Positions, an album that just holds up better every year. I just think that's a record that will go on and on to just expand and expand in the public imagination. But this album, it's just as hard-hitting from a totally different angle. I just love this album.
What did you two learn about this album from this session? Because Ariana was there and let spill maybe some things that she hasn't in the places where she's talked more publicly.
The one thing that she hasn't talked about publicly that we'll get more from Rob after this episode airs next week is the Rubber Soul influence that she talked a lot about with us at the listening session, which Rob and I were both very excited about.
Very intriguing to hear her talk about the Beatles as an inspiration and specifically Rubber Soul. But it's also just like very clear that these songs are just the intensity of these songs and the way they are really emotionally blunt. No real trying to skirt the issue emotionally in these songs, as Brittany really nailed it in her review. But that definitely came across in the session with her listening to these songs, obviously. It was obviously a very emotional experience for her.
Listen, sonically, that is not wildly evident. It wouldn't have been in my first 50 guesses of the influences on this album. It's more of a spiritual type of influence, I take it. To explain in what sense and how and where Rubber Soul by the Beatles influenced this album.
A lot of what she talked about was the intricacies of the production and kind of the things that they added into the songs and layered into there. Like Imperfect For You is a big one that was referencing Rubber Soul in terms of that kind of, there's like a little bit of that weirdness in the way that the like melody goes.
Imperfect, why I'm messy, completely de-stressed, but I'm not like this.
And like even just like on the chorus and things like that pulled from Rubber Soul for her. So there's a lot of stuff that's layered into there that is a lot more kind of like 60s pop inspired.
And also just the concept of a whole album of love songs that are very blunt, honest, candid, without a lot of happy endings. Definitely like not just kind of fun, breezy sort of romance that we heard so much of on Positions, which in case I haven't mentioned it before, is a truly classic album. Thank You Next and Positions are both so great. But yeah, I think that there's that aspect of Beatles-like emotion through this album and Beatles-like sonic exploration.
Let's talk about Yes And.
Yeah, it's funny because it was the first single from the album. It was a number one hit. It was very much a calling card for the album. It was like, hey, here's a little cheat sheet to what I've been up to since you haven't heard from me. Musically, it's really an outlier from the album and emotionally as well. It's funny that it's got that thing of being the lead single that really doesn't necessarily tell you a lot about how the album's going to sound. As Brittany brilliantly put it after we listened to it, it's the shake it off moment from this album. It's like the lead single that's, hey, let's catch up thematically, but it's not going to give away many of the secrets. So I love that song, but I think I understand when people say that it's actually like one of the least powerful songs on this album.
Yeah, I think after listening to the full album, I found it to be the weakest for me in comparison to the rest. And it's not, because I like the single when it came out, and then I was like, oh, there are a lot of the pop moments on this album are like what I want. We Can't Be Friends is like a dream Ariana song for me.
Can't be friends, but I'd like to just pretend.
That is like everything that I love about like her big kind of pop anthems. Like I'm a big like One Last Time stan and songs like that. I think like she does really great.
That song, I think it's because of course still this is new and still madly in love with this album. So it's hard to put in perspective. But that is like one of the absolute most powerful, most beautiful, most pained, most soulful things she's ever done. Mm-hmm. That song just completely blows me away in this album.
We Can't Be Friends is cathartic, but it has that really excellent understated electronic production, electronic pulse on it. It does feel, again, it doesn't feel like the last few Ariana albums. It feels like totally fresh territory musically for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Absolutely. Like it, she described it in the listening session as she wanted it to sound like you're standing outside the club and your favorite song's on, but you're taking a moment to take a breath outside. And I love that description of the production of it because it does have that mutedness to it where it does feel like a little bit, I don't know, just like the way that the synths sound on it. There's a little bit of that kind of that mutedness to it, which I really like.
Well, you know, what's fascinating about that is, as you know, there's this whole thing of YouTube's where you can hear songs. It recreates the experience of being in a like a club bathroom and hearing the song from next door.
I love that she described it that way because one of my favorite ones of that is like, you're outside the club, it's raining, and Rain On Me is playing inside the club. That is my favorite one. But like, I love those.
I wonder if she was deliberately, if she got the idea from that. That would be absolutely fascinating.
Very likely. Yeah, it seems very likely that was where she got it from.
Yeah.
I think people going in thought the album might as well be titled That Marriage Was Dead When I Got There.
Honestly, there were a lot of reasons to think that the theme of this album might be how fun things were in the new relationship when it's very much taking stock. It's a divorce album. It's funny that it's also a turning 30 album. It's funny that when I was writing about the single Yes and imagining what it was telling us about the album to come And I was talking about she's turning 30, like she's turned 30. It's a gearing up to be her Saturn's return statement. And then, of course, there's this big Saturn's return interlude on the album with an astrologer going very deep into the Saturn return mythology. And I thought, wow, when I wrote that, I had no idea how serious she was about that aspect of the concept.
Yeah.
But it's very much a, and there's a great tradition of turning 30 divorce albums. Carole King's Tapestry is, of course, the queen of the entire genre, but there's a lot of them and they are powerful statements, but this is like absolutely in that tradition.
Yeah, I think people, I think it was one of those albums where it could have gone, like Rob said, like one of two ways with it. And I think especially with the title, Eternal Sunshine, I think that there, especially the title with the first single being this kind of, I don't like this really, I don't give a fuck about what you're saying about me type of thing. And like kind of like bouncy house single that's like really fun and uplifting and so clubby. And then the title being Eternal Sunshine, she did preview it as like maybe related to the film, but I don't think people realized how deep the lore of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind plays into the full album. It's the premise of the We Can't Be Friends video that just came out. I think it's very much lyrically so much darker than I think I anticipated the album to be, but obviously there's so much of that kind of sunshininess of the actual music of it. Like it never feels like super dark in the way that like Thank You Next at times feels on it.
Not a huge astrology fan myself. Kacey Musgraves' upcoming album is like super Saturn Returns.
Yeah, so, that's a big Saturn Return album. I feel like there's someone else who just talked about it too. I feel like a lot of people have been, oh, like Dua Lipa talked about it.
With you, yeah.
Her album. She's like in the middle for Saturn Return, so it's not a Saturn Return album. Del's 30 was a Saturn Return album.
Yes.
Lover, famously a Saturn Return album. Yes. And Reputation.
I don't appreciate the unscientific nature. I'm just being honest. I hope it doesn't hurt your feelings, but I sort of, the unscientific thing of it is, bothers me from my subjective position. It grates on me. But what I say all that to, and I once, a very famous artist, I have unfortunately been dishonest about my feelings about astrology with many artists I've talked to, because you can't really sit there and be like, I think what everything you're saying is bullshit, but please continue. But I say all this to say, however, that clearly, particularly the Saturn return thing, if it's a helpful construct that helps people parse through their lives, both just normal people and artists, then go with God or lack of God and the position of stars in the sky, whatever works. So that's, I will say, despite my somewhat instinctive aversion to this, and I do feel a little Saturn returned out between, yes, Dua and this, and then Kacey, it's like a lot. It's just a lot. Maybe it's the peak Saturn return. It's also honestly about, of course, it's about millennials. It's about where millennials are in their lifespan. So yeah, that's really what's happening. And they're all filtering it through this construct, and cool.
I think it is. It's connected to, I think, many millennials grew up on, no doubt, Return of Saturn, like that album being, I think, formative probably a lot for a lot of people. Obviously, the increasing popularity of astrology, especially for millennials, and like kind of the way that that's been a part of our, I don't know, the way we've thought about our lives for the last 10, 15 years, and increasingly. And I think especially having that be such like a big cultural conversation, I feel like a lot, and this is me included, but I think a lot of millennials had spent their 20s fearful of their Saturn return and what it would bring in. And the idea of like, you have this 2.5 years of your late 20s where everything is going to go crazy. And like, it is, depending on how you see it, that's obviously just going to happen at the end of your 20s. Like when you go into your 30s, like it's just like, just what happens. Like everyone's lives are changing in a big way. If you are married, like there is the possibility of it ending in divorce. If you're thinking about marriage, you're thinking about kids, you're thinking about like the next phase of your life after college and getting a job and having like the idea of like, the fun part of your life is supposed to move on and you're going into this new direction. So I think it's just like a way for millennials, just, I think for anyone who like, believes in astrology, to describe and encompass the sort of tumultuousness of turning 30 and what that means.
Totally. And my obnoxious hatred of astrology has led to an interesting, but at least an interesting point, which is, again, generationally, and you can speak to this, there's a large group of millennials, artists and otherwise, who are turning 30 and making mm-hmm. albums about turning 30. And that's fascinating. It's fascinating that we get to see all these, that we got to see Taylor's version of that,
yeah, that,
leaving the stars out of it. You know, we get to see Taylor's version of that, and now we get to see this. And this is, there are many signs that this is a more mature Ariana Grande.
Yeah, I think it's all just a way to describe getting older and it makes sense of it. There are so many albums that you can technically even just put to this sort of Saturn Return album trend without them even having rumors. Technically, for Stevie Nicks was a Saturn Return album, but obviously she didn't describe it that way at the time. It's like all of that kind of, it's fascinating when you put it together, but I think it is also just just, again, turning 30.
So let's see, what was the Bob Dylan Saturn Returns album? Was it like New Morning?
It's New Morning. I wrote a whole thing about this when Lover came out. Taylor never talked about Lover. She didn't use the word Saturn Return, did she?
Reputation is a lot more of a Saturn Return album. Lover comes at the tail end of it.
Well, it's just the current slang term for, you know, for turning 30. It's not going to last. Sorry. It's not going to last.
I find that a much more useful way of looking at this, that we're just talking about people turning 30.
Jira, Low, you know, there's a long tradition of these turning 30 introspective albums. And it's so funny that Gwen Stefani and all the ways that she influenced culture, she probably was not expecting to be one of the key astrological minds of the past 30 years, but she more or less single-handedly brought this concept into our life. But for Ariana, it's in the tradition of somebody turning 30 and making this introspective, where am I now kind of album. And but also that it's so tied in with the divorce. And it's funny with the title, what we were talking about, what we expected from the title, Eternal Sunshine. And I was expecting more sort of optimism on this album in terms of, oh, I've been through this, but look, like I've come out on the other side and I've found this, that, and that at the end of the rainbow. I thought that there was going to be a lot more attempt to bring uplift to this. Whereas instead, she's being very candid about these sad emotions in a way that is really provocative. When I first heard the album, I thought in terms of Sweetener and how it was similar to Sweetener, but so profoundly different. And specifically the way that key line on Sweetener, the light is coming to give back everything that darkness stole. And this is a version of Sweetener where, you know, the darkness stole a lot. We're going to take toll of the damage that the darkness did. We're not going to talk about the light coming to fix everything. And I like how this album doesn't end with but then it all got better. You know, there's nothing like that on this album. Instead, it ends really beautifully and really movingly with the words from her grandmother. God, what a wise woman Ariana Grande's 98-year-old grandmother is. I wish her Nona would give me advice. I wish we could all hear her giving her words of wisdom at the end of our day.
I love that it's featuring Nona, like Nona is the hot new rapper.
She got a Nona feature. Nona never does features. Everybody wants Nona's 16, yeah.
Let's talk about Bye, which was, I think you compared it to Diana Ross, if I'm not mistaken, Bruno.
Yeah, I think there's something so like that, like 70s Diana Ross, Barbara Streisand vocal Olympics type of layering and all of that in it. And just like the strings on it, it just feels very like massive and big and lush and very beautiful.
I will say that the moment when she says boy bye in the chorus, that somehow a ponytail flip is built into the music. But I just...
You can hear the whip of the ponytail in the background, right?
Maybe that's it.
It's like the flutes on Yes And. Like, it's just beneath the surface.
The ponytail flip, such a key. She's got a lot of moves like that that you can always sort of like implicitly hear. The ponytail flip, the eyelash flutter. Bye is such a great song. It's so dismissive and yet just beautiful song.
And let's talk about the title track, Eternal Sunshine. All my demons, all my lies, that you play me like a dummy.
One of my favorites. So many really devastating moments in the first half of the album. Top loads the album with like, here's like all of the kind of scenes from the end of my marriage that made me realize that, hey, this is ending. I just think it's a very gorgeously done song.
I think it's interesting that it uses trap hi-hats in a really, they sound fresh. And I think we are definitely in the final days, if not already past the era of the trap hi-hat in general, yeah. And certainly in pop songs. It almost has a nostalgia to it at this point.
Good point. Also, just like, again, with the title, I was expecting a little more sunshine in the song. And instead, it's very, as Brittany really captured in her review, she really takes the movie concept really to heart, that, mm-hmm. that the movie is obviously has so much more to do with the album than the general. Definitely the poetry of Alexander Pope, the phrase like eternal sunshine of the spotless mm-hmm. mind, that does not end up being such a major theme on the album, although it could be in there somewhere. There's certainly like an epistle to Dr. Arbuthnot kind of theme, but definitely the movie itself is a much more conceptual, much more at the heart of the concept than I would have necessarily guessed.
Yeah, I think also like making it such a priority in the album to really get into less of just like my heart is broken and more like I wish I could just forget all of this, and yet I also maybe don't and don't know how I feel about that. Like I think that kind of part of it rippling through, especially on Eternal Sunshine, where it's just like wanting to forget about this relationship friendship, and a song like Wish I Would Hated You Too. Like, it's just that complicated feeling of not really wanting to let go as much as you thought you did is really well done on here.
We should go back and talk about Don't Want to Break Up Again, which has the indelible I Don't Want to Fuck With Your Head chorus. Which it's amazing that no one in human history, to my knowledge, has previously used Don't Want to Fuck With Your Head as a pop chorus. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's, again, another one of these songs that is really pained and regretful, but not self-righteous. And that's a real achievement of this album that I think is easy to overlook, that these songs, that there isn't a lot of, the relationship ended because one of us was right and one of us was wrong. There's no one of us was good, one of us was bad. The whole theme through the album of it's breaking my heart to break yours, that kind of, that theme, that mood comes up a lot. And the really skillful way of avoiding that sort of easy resolution in itself is really remarkable mm-hmm. in the song and through the album, I think.
With your, Brittany, your point about back to different, it almost could be like a Mary J. Blige song or something.
Yeah.
Vibe-wise. It's interesting. And there's also the bit, it's very on trend with that, the TikTok song about, I think I like this little life, when she says, hope you'll still think fondly of our little life.
I didn't even clock that.
I love that.
But yeah, her, you know what? Her really restrained vocal delivery, I really like on that song. It's just so calibrated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like one of the best part. I mean, with any sort of watching an artist mature and grow over the course of their career, I think it's been really fun and interesting to see the way that Grande has not been, I'm going to just doing the vocal Olympics part of herself and on everything, and really learning how to wield her voice in super interesting ways on her pop songs, even when they do feel like maybe, where it seems like it would be a thing that people would think would be obvious for her to do on a song and taking a left turn on it. I think she said in the Zane Lowe interview that she has like that equal parts of Mariah Carey and Imogen Heap in her, and like how that sort of is what she's trying to fuse together. And I feel like this album's a great example of kind of her finding that middle ground between those two like main influences for her music.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall rock climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
So, yeah, Supernatural.
Yeah, I love I feel like the middle section of the album just gets into a lot of the more kind of classic Ariana type of songs. And this is just, it feels like a very sort of old school, like Ariana love song, a little bit more of that restraint in her vocals and kind of the way that she produces them is a really fun song.
Yeah, very. Yeah, I totally agree. It's in terms of what you said about it being in the middle of the album and just revisiting her classic sound.
And next up is True Story.
This is a true story about how the life.
The combination of this and The Boy Is Mine are so, these are the ones that feel so like late 90s, early 2000s, like R&B pop type of production, swoopy type of bass, synth, whatever sound that's happening on True Story, I really love, and just makes me like very nostalgic for that kind of turn of the century kind of R&B sound. She described them as her like bad girl anthems or whatever, and also it was like so much a response to the song that leaked, Fantasize.
Fantasize about it all the time.
And think how much people were really drawn to that in a way that surprised her, because it was a parody song, like a spoof song. Everyone thought it was like real, or like her next single or something. I love that she leaned into the fact that people just really enjoyed that sound from her.
Yeah, that was something she wrote in 2021, this song Fantasize, and it was written for a TV show, and she said it was like a parody of a 90s girl group vibe. Mm-hmm. And so did she say at the event that, or somewhere, that she was drawing on people's love for that with True Story? Gotcha. Yeah,
because I think it's still not clear, like, when the show, if the show is going to use that song or any of the other songs. So I think she was just like, let me try to write my version of that. So both True Story and The Boy Is Mine feel so born out of that kind of surprise appreciation that everyone had for this random leak.
The bass synth could also be seen, if you're talking about 90s, it could be seen as like a Max Martin self-tribute, right?
No, totally. Because especially The Boy Is Mine feels so, or Break Up With Your Girlfriend Because I'm Bored, like that sound feels related because that samples NSYNC's It Makes Me Ill and feels very of that era. So yeah.
Also, what an awesome NSYNC song to sample.
I know.
Honestly, I think of this whole interlude of the album as the Britney interlude. She was like, okay, what can I, just putting like these two songs together, it's really funny because these are such TRL songs.
Yeah.
Definitely, Brian, I like your idea that Max Martin is like, why not? You know, this is my roots.
If you look at Max as an artist, which he is, in addition to being a producer writer, with every artist, you know, that has a long career, long successful career, there's this long period of reinvention and keeping up with the times and changing. And then there's always a point, almost always, where it's like, actually what people want in some ways is do your original thing a bit. And then this is him doing, to a certain extent, this is him doing his original thing at Ariana's request, no doubt.
What makes the song so great too, like it is very much such an Ariana song, but I feel like if this were on like Breakaway by Kelly Clarkson, like this would fit perfectly on there. This would fit perfectly on Oops, I Did It Again for Britney. Fun house era Pink. I think there's so much of that. I feel like you can hear any of Max's girls singing this song in their own interpretation, in their own way, with that type of beat. Robin obviously is such a big reference point for that song too.
True Story also, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like she's speaking to someone in a relationship, but when she says, I'll play the bad girl if you need me to, I'll be the one you love to hate, she's also talking about her sort of press reputation and the sort of reputational hit or whatever she took with the most recent turn in her romantic life. I think that's safe to say.
It feels very Yes And related, especially if the song's coming back to back. I feel like it feels very like that to me.
Right, where she obviously at first addressed all that quite as bluntly as a human being could address thing in her characteristically coy manner. We've talked about this before. It's interesting, Ariana and relatability, Ariana and likability. I've always been fascinated by her relationship to it because she's never, I think one of the coolest things about her is that she's never presented her, she's never had some nice girl image that then got blown up. She never was like presenting herself as the world's sweetest, cuddliest person, right? There always was like an open, from the very beginning that the sort of adult world learned about her with all the sort of donut licking and everything. There always was like a slight, I forget if I ever told you about the time I tried to explain to the donut licking. I may have even talked about this in the pod together when I tried to explain the donut licking incident to Future.
Wow. No, Brian, you did not tell this story before.
I was in the studio with Future doing a cover story on him, and I forgot how it came up. His manager brought up Ariana or something, and so it was, and somehow the donut licking thing came up, and he was like, what? No matter how many times I explained it to her, he couldn't quite understand. It was such a non-scandal in his conception of things, given what he knew from his peers. He just kept saying, she licked a donut? Like, I still, to this day, I'm not sure I ever got across like what the crux of the problem was. Anyway, from the beginning, if anything, she was her. There was always like a micro tinge of like scandal and edginess and just bite to her persona, which is interesting for a pop star, I think.
Yeah, I think her trajectory has been pretty fascinating in that, like where it's like she was on Broadway first and then she moved to Nickelodeon. And I think the Nickelodeon perception versus the Disney perception. She's a couple, well, actually, no, she's around the same age as the Disney kids from that same age. But she started a few years after that first wave of Miley and Selena and the Jonas Brothers. And I feel like the Nickelodeon kids were not adhering to that kind of Disney puritanical stuff in the same way that her Disney peers were. And again, she was also like a little bit older when they started to film Victorious and whatever the other show she did was. And very quickly started doing her music career. Like her Nickelodeon period barely had a second to become this thing, this type of Hannah Montana. And she was also a supporting character on the Nickelodeon show too. She was able to have that freedom to very quickly move into her music career while the Nickelodeon show was wrapping up without it lingering too much. And also she's like a huge weirdo. I feel like everything, I think it became very clear that she was just like her taste was like very like weird and strange and quirky in a way that is like genuinely, this girl's like weird. And so I feel like that's like the thing with her too, where she didn't really have to try too hard to be relatable because she's like someone who's deeply online and like references a lot of stuff and is just kind of part of her. On top of, again, like she's a theater kid. I think it's just the theater kid energy.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's also, one thing that's interesting is 4 years between albums, there was a period when she was releasing music incredibly rapidly. And one of the sort of lines on her at the time was, she's back when it seemed like 2019, when people were talking about, it's a flip of what's happening now, but people were genuinely talking, as it turned out, totally wrongly, but that traditional pop stars were being bumped off the streaming charts by like upstart face tattoo rappers, big pop stars were dead, and that during that period, again, which turned out to be all completely bullshit, but during that period, the one pop star who people were, there was more than one sort of critic touting that line, and at the time, they were touting one pop star who could keep up, who was nimble enough, R&B and hip-hop savvy, and was releasing music rapidly enough, was Ariana. And so it's interesting, she went from that to promptly taking a four-year break, obviously, for various reasons.
I think it's also just because she was responding to her own news cycle faster than most pop stars. It's like Sweetener came out, and Sweetener, she started seeing Pete Davidson while she was recording Sweetener, and just before she releases the album, she adds the Pete Davidson song on there. She adds this song about her celebrity boyfriend at the time. Not even 6 months later, less than 6 months later, not only do they have a very public breakup, her longtime ex-boyfriend dies very tragically. Combination of that. Mac Miller dies, and this all kind of is a storm of things happening in her life. And then she releases an album like weeks later. She's responding to her own, and she didn't do much else around it. Like, she released this album. She had this like incredibly raw response to all these things happening at once, and does it without waiting to do it. She doesn't take 2 years to record it. She doesn't sit on it and then do a whole press cycle around it. She just was like, I'm releasing this right this second. And the same way with Eternal Sunshine, she recorded this in November, December. She only recorded it because Wicked stopped filming. She wasn't planning on releasing music. And then there was a strike and she was like, oh, maybe I'll just finish this before we can go back and film my movie. So she's working on a much faster timeline in a lot of ways that I think a lot of pop stars have caught up with, but weren't doing at the time that she was doing it.
That so precisely nails what people were talking about. Yeah, she was working at like rapper speed, so much drama in her life that was interesting to respond to in music, which was also like more hip hop. Vaguely at the time. And look, someone like Taylor started releasing a lot more music.
A lot of pop stars are now moving at a lot faster speed, I think, because they realize they can. I think there was just so much of that traditional pop rollout that was happening, and there are so few people who can do that. The Beyonce surprise draw, you know, that kind of stuff is rare, but I think a lot of pop stars learned, oh, if I want to say something, I can just say it and I could release it, and then I could have a song out there, or I can have an album out there or something.
I'm curious, perception was, and it's no one's business, but the perception was that she like broke up a marriage recently, and she denied that was the case. She did lose some Instagram followers, and there was a bit of a backlash. It now to me doesn't seem like it was of any consequence at all, really, to her reputation or popularity. But how do you see it?
It's like celebrity gossip is celebrity gossip. I feel like it's always going to draw people. I feel like that makes people more interested in the album, right? Like, oh, what's she going to say about this? I think it's obviously there was that reputation hit. She obviously spends a lot of the album responding to that reputation hit. Not a lot of the album, but the lead single response to that reputation hit. There's other references to it on the album. But at the end of the day, I think it's one of those things where, one, people are going to listen because they like the gossip. Two, if the songs are good, then the songs are good.
Let's see. I don't think we did I Wish I Hated You. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so much of the album is just going through all the kind of confusing and conflicting emotions that one goes through after a divorce and all of that. It's like a lot of the album, one song says, it's even just like going from bye to don't want to break up again. And yeah, I think the song feels like the most theatrical one. It does remind me a lot of The Last 5 Years by Jason Robert Brown, who's someone that she's worked with and has done sort of live concert versions of a lot of his songs. And it reminds me a lot of that, which is a really great musical about a divorce told from both sides over the course of the songs. But yeah.
And it's written over a repeated arpeggiated figure, much like, you know, say my love will open the door.
Brian. Right, everything on the bingo card.
I just said that to get a reaction from Rob, but it is true.
And you're successful. Like Pete Townsend's Empty Glass Saturn Return album. So many ways, like that song is her and My Love Opened the Door and We Can't Be Friends is her Rough Boys. But I think, and okay, since Brian, this is like a Law and Order episode. Counselor, you opened the door. Let's mention Tunnel of Love, okay?
I was about to say, fine, is this Brilliant Disguise? Fine. I don't know.
Let's mention, yes, mention Tunnel of Love. But we're getting to like halfway through side two of Tunnel of Love.
I'm and drinking like, now. It's water, water, yeah, but I am drinking.
Yes. It's another divorce album where what strikes you is there's no recrimination. There's no self-righteousness. And we get halfway through side two and it takes a more general reflective tone, you know, when you're alone. And this is that point in the album where she's gone through all the Sturm und Drang and now she's just like reflecting back more on it.
I'm Googling Bruce Springsteen's Saturn Return.
That's a cursed thing to Google. Your computer is going to...
Okay, apparently the river darkness is his Saturn Return album, according to astrology.
Numerically, yes. Yeah, indeed, yes. I love the, on Imperfect For You, the second to last song on the album. I love the warped guitar strum. It's such a cool production touch. You got to have a guitar in your album now, but I'm going to take it and melt it sonically. It's a very cool effect.
I love how this song has so much like 90s VH1, Lilith Fair, coffeehouse energy. It's really a fantastic sound from her that is so perfect for her songwriting imagination. Just kind of crazy chords, crazy hooks on this one.
It's like a Mutant Jewel song.
It's funny because I think of it more as a Sheryl Crow song, but I guess that we're splitting hairs here. But the road trippiness of it, I really like. I guess I associate those road trippy songs more with Sheryl Crow. Knocking the Jewel road trippy songs.
They were meant for you, Rob. I wasn't sure she was going to make another album. I wasn't sure what was going on. She is doing Wicked is coming out.
She has spoken about how she was not anticipating releasing any music until both the Wicked films were out. And it seemed pretty clear. Like, it seemed like in her sort of, she was very much committed to taking a little bit of a break from that side of her life. And she spoke about this both at the listening session, I think in the Zane Lowe interview she did, where she didn't feel like as present in a lot of she just felt burnt out and not super present in what she was doing. And again, like that feels both fair in the sense of the amount of music she was releasing earlier in her career and that sort of hustle of being both a Nickelodeon star and then a pop star and then being a full-time pop star, plus the amount of stuff that she, just like the deeply traumatic things that she went through back to back in her life. Obviously, she experienced the Manchester bombings before Sweetener then formed a lot of that album. Again, the death of Mac Miller had a massive effect on her. It's just a kind of series of like deep tragedies that I cannot imagine having then going on tours and things like that on top of it. So it seemed like she was pretty committed to taking a little bit of time between albums, not necessarily quitting music, but it seemed like she didn't feel as inspired for a little bit and was really focused and immersed in Wicked, which seems to be something that has been really important to her.
Thoughts on what this tells us about the rest of Ariana's career?
The beginning of a new era. It's really a strong beginning for her 30s. She's not recapitulating obvious successes that she's had in the past. She's not repeating successful stuff that she did in her 20s. She's striking out in a different direction. And I think we'll probably learn more as time goes on with the album about what the sort of hiatus meant to her, which is pretty enigmatic at this point. Very surprising, like we were saying before, for a pop star to go this long between albums and to get so immersed in a movie project, which is also already a known franchise. Like, Wicked is not hers. Wicked is already a thing in itself. So in many ways, a really surprising thing for her to immerse herself in for a while. But clearly, it meant something to her, as Brittany said, to immerse herself in that. And obviously, that experience is reflected on this album, that she's rejuvenated in that way.
I think also, like, I feel like the thing that I've loved hearing in her music over the years is, again, that growth of her own songwriting and production. I think she's someone who like started out figuring out what her pop career would look like outside of Nickelodeon and outside of Broadway and like outside of all those things, and was throwing a lot of things at the wall. Like albums like My Everything and Dangerous, well, do you really like them? But they don't carry her personality in the same way that Sweetener begins to show us, which is why I love that album so much. And why, again, Thank You Next, I think that's the best example of a total career reset that a person can have. And both in terms of playing by her own rules and how she released it, but also just like really giving a lot more of a honest look into her taste and her brain and kind of something that felt like very entirely her. So I think this does feel like that part of her creatively being released in less of a, in less duress, feels like it's showing off a lot of the creative skills she's been honing over the years and is able to show off. And I hope that there's a lot more kind of appreciation for that side of her coming up. And especially, again, like the vocal production on here is insane. That's something that she's pulled a lot from Mariah and is very clear that she's, it is very important to like how she's developed as an artist, is being able to produce her own vocals in that way.
Did we talk about Ordinary Things or just about the Nona part?
Like the Nona part, it really steals the show.
I will say that We Could Have Omakase in Tokyo If You Want It is the most enticing opportunity offered by a pop song for me in quite some time.
We could go pop all the champagne in California. We could have omakase in Tokyo if you wanna.
That is in my top 10 things I would like a pop song to offer me. So thank you, Ariana. Yes, please. We would all like omakase in Tokyo.
From omakase in Tokyo to Nona in Boca. It's a world-spanning tour of heartbreak.
And that's our show. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe to Rolling Stone Music now, wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because that's always appreciated. But as always, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.